Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a former Clevelander and lifelong Cavs fan now living in San Francisco. My co-host is Joshua Jamison, a freshly unemployed Ohio State grad living in an arguably worse black hole for Cleveland sports, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. How's it going, Josh?
Keith, it is going so well. It is all my honor to be spending this time with you right now.
We're glad to have you. I'd like to apologize for the lengthy delay between episodes. It's been a busy summer for myself, and Arnav decided to leave the show to focus on more important endeavors. I want to thank him for his awesome work, and hopefully we can have him on as a guest in the future. His departure leaves a big hole, especially in the numbers and stats department, but hopefully Josh and I will be able to generate content that's still compelling. To that end, we have a lot to catch up on today. It's been about 2 months since our last show. Our primary topic today will be the Cavs payroll and some work I've done to understand what their expenses were last year versus what their expenses project to be this year. There's also a vast number of odds and ends to talk about, but is there anything you'd like to start with, Josh?
Yeah, I think the most important and exciting news of the offseason is that Cleveland Cavalier NBA champion Tristan Thompson is now dating Khloe Kardashian.
Yes, I saw it's official in People magazine, so it's not just little rumors on Instagram and the Twitter sphere. It is confirmed that Tristan is dating, it's Khloe Kardashian, is that right?
Yes, Khloe, not the one who's dating Kanye. But
right, that's Kim.
Correct. And okay. I believe, I might be wrong when I say this, is this the Kardashian that James Harden dated?
I'm not sure. Is this the one that Lamar Odom was married to?
I think that might be it. This is possible.
Okay. Look, all right, guys, we're going to have to do some research on this. But I'm pretty sure this is the Lamar Odom one.
Okay, while you look that up, I'm going to read my quotes from this article.
Okay.
But are they – this is from Cleveland.com. But are they an item or just talking? The courtship, spelled with a K, see what I did there?
Yeah.
Is apparently real. Khloe and Tristan have been seeing each other for a little bit, a source told the magazine. He's a really nice, good guy, and she seems very happy with him. That's a source. Someone did some digging to get that kind of information.
Right. Khloe's publicist, probably.
Yeah.
So are we – I mean, is this – you know, things didn't really go so hot for Lamar Odom after the Khloe thing. Are we concerned here?
No, and I actually did just confirm. It is Lamar Odom and James Harden.
Oh, and James Harden. Hmm.
Yeah, and James Harden did have a pretty bad season afterwards. So.
Well, he did. Yeah, I mean, he came to camp fat, right? But then he got himself in shape, but maybe that was post-Khloe.
Hmm.
Yeah, all right. Well, we're going to have to keep an eye on this, obviously.
This is pretty important stuff, and I'm sure Twitter will do a good job keeping us up to date with, similar to Kyrie and his relationship status last season.
God. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, this is lots for me to not look forward to. All right. What else is on the docket here? What's next?
In equal unimportance in terms of the off season, Haynes from the Cleveland Plain Dealer beat reporter has decided to leave to go join ESPN to work with the Warriors. Keith, do you want to tell people why we should care about this?
Yeah, I noticed that this got some play on Reddit and on Real Cavs Fans and on, you know, probably other Cavs forums. So Chris Haynes was, I'm not sure if he was the Plain Dealer's primary beat reporter for the Cavs. I think he probably was. And he posted on Facebook earlier this week or last week or something, who cares, that ESPN has hired him away and he is now going to be embedded with the Warriors and following them around. Now, I don't know. The guy who did that last year for ESPN was Ethan Sherwood Strauss. He followed the Warriors around, and he's sort of an analytics guy. I really like him. Chris Haynes is not an analytics guy. I didn't think he was a very spectacular beat reporter. You know, he has really good access to the team, but, you know, as far as I know, he didn't really report anything interesting. Until this week, he reported something interesting. We'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, I don't really care. Do you care?
I don't care. I saw someone posted on Reddit, and I was like, oh, good for him. He's from California. He's going home.
Right.
And it was just a ton of hate spewing, and I was kind of caught off guard.
Yeah, there's some vitriol on this kind of stuff. I remember when LeBron left for Miami, Brian Windhorst got hired by ESPN to sort of follow LeBron around in Miami. And before LeBron left, Windhorst was awesome. Reddit wasn't really around then, but on other Cavs forums, he was a frequent contributor, and he was extremely well liked. And then as soon as he left, he sort of became like the butt of a bunch of jokes. People, made fun of his weight and some of his, the way that he follows LeBron around. But yeah, I don't know why people get upset about this kind of stuff. But anyway, I think we've already dedicated enough time to talking about this.
Absolutely.
He did say something. Well, let's get to the assistant coaches thing a little bit later. I think, let's see, what else has been going on? So LeBron signed a new contract with the Cavs. That's sort of interesting. Do you want to describe the parameters of it?
Yeah, I believe it was 3 years at the max, so around 30.1 million, or sorry, 31 million. And with a player option on the 3rd year.
Right. So what he had done his first 2 years in Cleveland is he had signed 1 year deals with a option for the 2nd year. And after last season, he did not exercise that option and he signed a new deal. And he did the same thing this year. He did not exercise the option and he signed a new deal. But this one is different because he signed a 2 year deal plus the option. So he has to stay in Cleveland unless we trade him for 2 years now instead of the one. Why do you think he would do such a thing?
Yeah, so this is the reason why this is interesting is basically everyone, including myself, figured that he would just sign another 1+1, which would allow him to become a free agent again next year when the cap went up once again. So then he could once again get the maximum contract. And on top of that, he also didn't choose to do a more lengthy contract. So it's kind of in between
Right.
getting the security of years and getting the maximum amount of money. So I'm not exactly sure why he would have done that. Do you have any ideas?
Well, okay. So the first thing is, and Arnav had a nice post about this on Reddit, but the first thing is, so by signing this, he gets more money this year and next year than he would if he signed a 1 year deal this year and a one year deal next year. The difference in money is actually pretty mild. I think the grand total over 2 years is like $3 million, which, LeBron in both of these situations he's averaging over $30 million a year. Nike reportedly is paying him like I think $60 or $70 million a year. So an incremental $1.5 million a year doesn't seem like something that would matter to him. But with this contract, he now becomes the highest paid player in the NBA, and next year he will become the highest paid player single season salary in NBA history. He'll break Michael Jordan's record that was set in Jordan's last year with the Bulls. So maybe he just wanted to lock that in.
Yeah, I think he saw Mike Conley's contract being the highest at the time, and he was like, "I'll give you 1 month, Mike Conley," and then he signed his contract.
Setting aside the preposterousness of Mike Conley being the highest paid player in the NBA, even if just for a month, like,
Hey, go Bucks, man.
So the reason why, I mean, Josh, you're aware of this. You've seen what I've written on this. I don't understand why LeBron did this. So he's giving up the flexibility of being able to sign a contract next offseason. And next offseason is particularly interesting because the NBA's collective bargaining agreement expires, and the entire framework of how much players can get paid is going to change. And you might say, like, well, maybe it's going to change for the worse. The players are, there's going to be a new max salary and it'll be less. Well, maybe, except that LeBron James is the vice president of the players' union, and the president of the players' union is Chris Paul, who's another guy who is just an obvious max guy. And you would think that those guys are going to argue for the max to go up.
Yeah, so I guess the only thing that I can think of is he knows something we don't, because he is on the inside and he knows something about the negotiations and what's going to happen. The other theory is, and this is kind of unsatisfying, is that he behaved in a suboptimal way, which happens all the time with human beings. And maybe he simply did just want to beat Michael Jordan's record, and he saw the chance to do it. And because the money's so incremental, he just doesn't particularly care anymore. The question still remains. That's not a fully satisfying answer, though, because the question is still, why 2 years and an option? Why not?
Longer? Why not lock it in? Why not lock it in for longer? So there are some issues here. So the NBA has this thing called the over 36 rule, and I am not fully, I don't know, intimate with the details of it. I do know this: if you sign a detail, if you sign a long-term detail deal that takes you over your age 36 year, there's a penalty in the short term to that deal. So what the NBA didn't want was teams signing people to these like super long deals where they're like basically kicking the pebble down the road in terms of player compensation in order to optimize in the short term. They didn't want teams hamstringing themselves in the future and for the present. So there's this over 36 rule. It's largely believed that the over 36 rule is going to be taken out of this next collective bargaining agreement. So maybe he's waiting. I just, I don't know. One other thing I saw was Carmelo Anthony and Chris Paul will also be free agents in two years.
Banana boat.
Yeah, so maybe, and Dwayne Wade will be as well with his new deal with the Bulls. So maybe those guys all wanted to hit free agency at the same time to have sort of one last hurrah somewhere. Maybe, I don't know. That seems like conjecture and speculation, but everything we've said for the last 3 minutes has been that. So, yeah, who knows? In any case, this is really good for the Cavs.
Yeah, it saves them a little bit more money. They don't have to think about it moving forward.
Right. I mean, I suspect you said LeBron might not. You suggested LeBron. You know, he is, you know, close to the whatever bargaining. In so much as there has been bargaining that's gone on between the players' union and the owners on the CBA next summer. If there's something to know, LeBron knows it. So maybe he knows something. If anything, though, I think the next collective bargaining agreement is going to be more favorable for the players. The basketball-related income has gone way up. Fixed costs are about the same. If anything, players are going to get more. So I don't know. I'm confused.
Yeah, I think this is definitely, you know, a time in the NBA's history where the players have more power than ever. I would be shocked if they didn't get a bump in the percentage. I think it's 51% right now. Is that correct? Goes to the players?
It's 51%, yeah. And that was fought over tooth and nail, and it was in a time when the NBA just made way less money. So now they're making way more money, and it's still 51%, which, you know, is probably arguably unfair for the players. Anyway, as we get deep into union theory and like what LeBron's doing and what those signals mean, yeah, I mean, it's just good that we don't need to listen to Stephen A. Smith and Woj say that LeBron's going to leave Cleveland, and they have him locked in to, even though he'll be the highest paid player in the NBA, he'll still be massively underplayed. They have him locked into a very reasonable contract, so that's all good.
Yeah, sorry, I had something to say and I totally forgot.
I'm sure it was brilliant.
It was.
Okay, so let's move on to the Olympics. Kyrie Irving won a gold medal.
It was shocking. And, I didn't see it coming.
Did you watch any of the Team USA games?
I barely watched any. This has been truly an off season for me as well.
I was about the same. I watched a few halves here and there. I didn't watch any games other than the Team USA games. I thought it was interesting in the finals game against, bizarrely, Croatia. The United States. Wait, was it Serbia?
I think it was Serbia.
Yeah. Well, this shows you how much I paid attention.
It was Serbia. Irving, I just checked.
Irving and Draymond both did not play much or play. Well, Draymond played basically none.
Kyrie was 1 for 6.
Yeah, Kyrie
and
wasn't great, but
0 for 2 from 3, and then 2 for 2 from the free throw line with 4 assists.
Overall, he was fine. I have his stats here. So overall, he averaged 11.4 points, 2.5 rebounds, 4.9 assists. But he was only playing 22 minutes a game. So, you know, if you were to mark that out to per 36 minutes, he'd be, you know, right around his, you know, what you would expect. He shot pretty well. He shot 38% from 3, 48% overall, 91% from the line. These sample sizes are so insanely small that it's hard to say anything, but at least he wasn't injured and he played well. I don't know what there is to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, not getting injured is good news. I wonder if I kind of wonder. I think I read something this summer where playing in the Olympics doesn't tend to have any impact on your performance in the upcoming season. So I've kind of heard it, people conjecture both ways. Oh, well, you enter in tired, or you come in with, this heightened sense of what it's like to be the best player in the world.
Right, yeah, you
But
have the experience of playing on a high, on a high platform or something.
more than likely, it's neither of those, and it's kind of a wash.
Yeah. I mean, I have some concern. I mean, Kyrie Irving in the finals of not this most recent season, but the one before, throughout the playoffs, he was really bothered by knee tendonitis, and it got confusing because he actually fractured his kneecap, the same knee that he was having the tendonitis in, and lots of doctors have argued that those two injuries had nothing to do with each other. But yeah, the fractured kneecap became a more serious injury. But up until that point, he had knee tendonitis, which is a repetitive stress injury, and so it was a little bit concerning that he, went through that, gauntlet in the playoffs this year, and then went straight to Olympic training and then the Olympics. But maybe, Kyrie is young. Maybe he's learned new stretching and strengthening exercises so that the tendonitis is a thing of the past. I don't know.
Yeah, here's hoping.
Yeah. I think, well, whatever. He'll get a month and a half off now before training camp starts. And yeah, hopefully he'll be okay. Let's see. So the last podcast we recorded was before the Cavs acquired Mike Dunleavy. How do you feel about Mr. Dunleavy?
Well, first of all, we acquired Mike Dunleavy because the Chicago Bulls thought that the 3-point line is kind of a fluke, and decided to build a team of Jimmy Butler, Rajon Rondo, and Dwayne Wade, which is incredible. But listen, I mean, Mike Dunleavy isn't going to add much, and I think you have his RPM number. Is that
I was letting you filibuster longer as I look it up,
I go. I'll keep going. He can shoot from three really well, but he's pretty old, and he can't play defense basically at all at this point. So, I mean, what's he gonna play? Is he just gonna be another locker room guy who LeBron really, really likes? Because it has been noted that he enjoys Mike Dunleavy Jr. He's age 35, by the way. I would suspect he's not going to play almost at all. Richard Jefferson, I would assume, is going to play most of the backup small forward minutes.
Right. Yeah, so all right. I've found the numbers. Mike Dunleavy is listed as a shooting guard under NBA's under ESPN's Real Plus Minus thing. So he was the 72nd best shooting guard in the NBA by plus minus last year. This is but there are a couple caveats here. First off, he only played 31 games last year. He had the back issues. And it was like the final 31 games. He was injured early and healthy late, so there's some hope that he'll be even more healthy coming into this year. And he only played 23 minutes a game. But yeah, his RPM was not good. The season before, he was the ninth best shooting guard in the NBA by RPM. And he played 63 games and 29 minutes a game. So, maybe we can chalk up his terrible season last year to recovering from the injury. But like you said, he's 35. 35-year-olds don't typically get better season to season. I loved him coming off the previous season, but now I just feel like whatever. I'm not.
Since the 2010 season, with the exception of 2011, where he shot 39.9%, oh, I guess in 2013, where he shot 38, he's and 2015, where he thought 39. I just totally made that up. I was going to say he basically has shot 40% over the past 6 years, which I think we've all heard the formula: surround LeBron with shooters and
Right.
go well for you.
Yeah, I love Mike Dunleavy's game. Like, he's an outstanding spot-up three-point shooter, and if ever there was somebody that could get people open spot-up three-point looks, it was LeBron James. And so you could expect sort of a natural boost to his efficiency because of the LeBron James effect. And yeah, maybe that'll happen. I'm not even cautiously optimistic on him. I'm sort of, I don't know, meh on the
Yeah,
Dunleavy
and
trade.
I'm not sure it matters. I don't think we need to rely on Mike Dunleavy to take. He's not going to be. He was never going to be the one who's going to push us over the edge.
Right.
And on that note, I'm not really sure what the edge is now that since the recording of the last episode, the Golden State Warriors have signed Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're probably not breaking that news to anybody listening to this podcast, but in case you didn't know,
case you missed it.
the Warriors have effectively replaced Harrison Barnes with one of the best shooters in NBA history, Kevin Durant, one of the best players, maybe even. We're starting to get into that territory with him. He's young. He's got a ways, a little bit more to prove. But yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, look, the Warriors are going to be even tougher than normal. So yeah, maybe Mike Dunleavy will be that thing to put us over the edge. I do like the Dunleavy trade. Was it a trade? Yeah, it was like some sort of weird
It was a
exception trade,
trade,
right?
and we got an exception out of it, correct?
Okay. The Bulls had to do it so that they could pay Dwayne Wade too much money, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so from that perspective, this is I mean, yeah, just from the perspective that one of the better teams in the East got worse, this is a win for the Cavs.
If you consider them one of the better teams, then yes.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point. Okay, let's move on. So the Summer League happened. I did not watch any of the Summer League games. I think Jordan McRae was there and Kay Felder was there.
Yeah.
The Kay Felder was the Cavs' second round draft. It was second round, right? It was like late second round draft pick. They bought the draft pick and they drafted this 5'9" guy out of University of Oakland or Oakland College or some college in the Bay Area. And people like him because they say he's strong and athletic, and they reminds them of Earl Boykins or
Nate Robinson.
Nate Robinson, yeah, just
Isaiah
because he's the same
Thomas.
height. Yeah, I mean, look, if he's Isaiah Thomas, that would be great. Isaiah Thomas was also a second round draft pick and is short. I would
He was
definitely
the
take that
last pick in
with
the draft.
right. So yeah, we're gonna have to see here with Cave Helder, but he, from what I read, he played pretty well in the summer league, and there was reason for optimism there. I still don't think he's gonna make the roster, but do you feel differently?
I think he'll make the roster. I watched a little bit of it. It's been 2 months, so I can't exactly remember. But from what I remember having a distinct impression that he fights on defense. Now, he's always going to have kind of the physical disadvantage, but he would aggressively try to jump over and under screens, and that was always really encouraging for me. He is pretty ball dominant, but he did some things where I know it's summer league, but it impressed me. I think he'll make the roster. Simply because what we'll talk about in a few minutes about the fact that, well, one, we lost Delly and then Mo Williams and his situation. I think we just need another guard, and I think he would be the guy who's gonna fill that third guard or fourth guard spot.
Yeah, the Cavs are sort of worrisomely thin at point guard now because, so they have Kyrie, and then that's the end of the depth chart, I guess. There's Kay Felder, would be the next guy. They do have Mo Williams. Let's talk about Mo now. So Mo, okay, so Mo Williams didn't play much in the playoffs. He didn't play much at all last year. There was some press about him having a knee injury, and I'm not sure exactly what that knee injury was, but to be honest with you, in the regular season last year, I thought the knee injury was just like a smoke screen for not hurting his feelings because Delly was outplaying him and getting more minutes. Do I seem crazy in saying that?
No, I think that's totally realistic. I think if you think back to not this previous finals, but the one before that where we played the Warriors the first time,
Yeah.
so much of the talk was, oh, you need another ball handler. Once Kyrie went down, Delly's not able to really in that year, Delly was not very good that year. And he was much better the next year. So we signed Mo Williams to kind of fill that. We need a second or I guess third ball handler once you have Kyrie and
Yep.
LeBron. And so I think Mo Williams came in expecting that role, but then Delly had this basically a breakout season. And kind of the irony in all that is we didn't need either of them because
Right.
Delly didn't handle the ball in the
Yeah,
playoffs.
Delly played poorly in the playoffs as well. Thank God Kyrie became super awesome out of nowhere. Okay, so the Cavs could have. So, all right, yeah, I buried the lead here. There is some chat that Mo Williams is considering retirement. And it's a little bit odd because if a player retires and they're signed to a multi-year deal, as Mo Ibbetson, there's 2 years left on his deal. You can, oh no, wait, sorry, there's 1 year left on his deal. But if somebody retires, you can stretch that out over multiple years to lower your cap impact. That would really have benefited the Cavs because we're going to get into this shortly, but they are way over the cap, and any money they can defer can really help them for luxury tax reasons. But they decided not to do that, which makes me think he's not going to retire, and they're going to kick the tires on him and see what he can do.
Yeah, I think that just points back to our relative lack of guard depth and trying to see. I mean, he started the season last year pretty well. So, I mean, maybe
He
he's still
did.
got something left in the tank.
He did. Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, he was shooting too much for my taste, but they were going in, and then his
Right.
shot sort of abandoned him late in the season and in the playoffs. So, anyway, I think we're ready to m move on to the main event here. You ready?
Ready to talk about Earl?
Yeah. So, J.R. Smith is the Cavs' final remaining unsigned free agent. Just to sort of put things into perspective, by RPM, J.R. Smith was bringing it up here. I mean, he was the 11th best shooting guard in the NBA last year. He was even better in the playoffs. He played incredible defense. He disappeared at times in the finals offensively, but his defense was there. He was an enormous part of what the Cavs did with their sort of LeBron James penetrating and finding an open shooter. He's sort of changed his game a little bit. He used to put the ball on the floor more, but he is more of a spot-up shooter now. He still can create his own offense, but that's not a role he plays as much anymore. He is, depending on who you ask, either critically important or pretty important to the Cavs' success. Does that seem like an accurate categorization of, his role?
Yeah, and I think in the finals, if you remember, he actually had quite a bit of success putting the ball on the floor, which he had not been doing any of the last season and a half. And the space that he gives to the rest of the team is, I would use the word critically important, yes.
He is 31 years old, I
That's
believe.
correct.
And he, to me, even though he didn't go to college, he is sort of a young 31. Actually, his birthday is,
In 3 days, 2 days, he'll be
it's
31 in
September
2 days.
9th. Yeah, so he is 30 years old, 364 days. Right now. So yeah, he's about to turn 31. To my eye, he's sort of a young 31. Like he keeps himself in great shape. He doesn't carry a lot of extra body weight on him. So to the extent that my eye test matters for projecting players going forward, I would expect him to age less dramatically than, say, the average shooting guard would going forward. I bring all this up because the Cavs are in sort of a tough position here. They have 14 players under contract currently. I'll just read them off. LeBron James at $31 million, Kevin Love at $21 million, Kyrie Irving at 17, $18 million, Tristan Thompson at $15 million, Iman Shumpert at $9.6 million, Channing Frye at $7.8 million, Mike Dunleavy at $4.8 million, Richard Jefferson at $2.5 million. Oh yeah, we re-signed Richard Jefferson. Mo Williams at $2.2 million, James Jones at $1.5 million, Chris Anderson, we signed Birdman, we didn't talk about that, at $1.5 million, Jordan McRae at $800,000, Cale Felder at $500,000. All of those guys combined bring the Cavs to $116 million in payroll, and that already puts them over the salary cap. They're total player expense, including the luxury tax, at this amount, is $124.8 million, which is a lot of dough. Weren't you looking at some list of teams and where they are relative to the cap? Where do the Cavs fall there?
Yeah, so the Cavs, as of now, not having signed J.R. Smith, are not the number one team in terms of salary. The Portland Trail Blazers come in at number one at 119 point
Wow. Okay.
6 million, and then
Okay.
almost tied with the Cavs is Detroit also at 116.
Huh. Those are interesting topics for another time. Yeah, I mean, the Trailblazers decided to go all in and re-sign all their free agents. Their owner is extremely wealthy, far wealthier than the Cavs owner. Paul Allen is their owner, and he has money to spare. So that partially explains why they're willing to pay so much for so little. But
so much for Evan Turner.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, who knows what they're doing. Anyway, good luck to the Trailblazers. I like the Trailblazers, and their fans are spectacular. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so the Cavs are at 124.8, including the luxury tax. Last season, including their $54 million tax payment, the Cavs were at 156.1 million. So they're at 124.8 now. Last year, they were at 156.1. So they've got, you know, $32 million to play with. So you might say, like, hey, why don't we just offer J.R. Smith, you know, $32 million? You know, we could offer him whatever. Unfortunately, the Cavs are way over the luxury tax. So if they were to offer J.R. Smith $10 million, their grand total jumps from 124, which is what it is now, to 164. So to pay J.R. Smith $10 million, their player expense goes up $40 million, and that's. You know, that's a big deal. Like that, you know, that I don't know. So that, yeah, that raises their player expense basically 30% just to get J.R. Smith in the building. And so I think what's going on here is the Cavs are looking to play some hardball with J.R. Smith to try to get him in for as little as possible. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah. So in our last episode, Arnav and I, when we were both discussing what J.R. Smith was going to make, the way that I thought about it was, well, an average starter in the NBA under this cap would make about $15 million. And J.R. Yep. Smith is at least an average starter.
Yep.
In terms of a shooting, maybe even an above average starter. And then on top of that, it's basically free money because we're not going to be able to spend that money anywhere else anyway. So J.R. could get anywhere from 15 to 25 million. But we didn't really take, you know, Keith, you try to rein us back in, but I don't think I did a good job of kind of understanding quite how much money that ends up being added to the tax. And then if we take into account the assistant coach situation.
Oh, right. Yeah, we should talk about that.
Yeah. So Chris Haynes reported a few days ago that the Cleveland Cavaliers have not offered basically any of the assistant coaches new contracts yet, and there seems to be a dispute there. They actually used the option on, I believe it's Damon Jones.
I can't remember if it was Damon Jones or Phil Handy, but one of the assistant coaches had a option for his contract for this year. The Cavs exercised that option, which you might say, oh, that's fine. Well, the thing is, this assistant coach,
third down on the bench.
Yeah, has been promoted. So Lou got promoted, so he got a bigger contract, and because, you know, he's no longer an assistant coach, he's now the head coach. This guy, I think, is now the head assistant coach, or at least, you know, has been promoted into a higher position. And so, yeah, the option was there, but he's actually doing more work now. He has more responsibility. So, yeah, to some, it seems like they're cheaping out there.
Yeah, so it seems if we take that all into consideration, the fact that we haven't re-signed J.R. Smith, that we haven't re-signed assistant coaches who don't count against the cap or any kind of tax, that we're basically pressing up against what is the Cleveland Cavaliers, possibly what is their entire operating revenue, which is a question that Keith and I have talked about a lot. How much money does the franchise actually make? Yeah. And are they willing to lose money? And if they are they already losing money?
Yeah, let me just do my 60-second rant on this. So, yeah, I wanted to approach this problem by trying to figure out what the Cavs' revenue was, and then I would subtract from that the player expenses and you know, try to figure out how much they could spend. But it's actually a really complicated problem. So first off, none of these numbers are disclosed. We know the team valuations. Forbes does some work on that, but they're working with limited knowledge as well. But so you would need to know how much money the team makes from their TV contract, how much they make from all the advertisements in the arena and all the advertisements they do, you know, around the city of Cleveland. You'd have to know, you know, ticketing revenue for all the games and all the playoff games. You would have to figure out, you know, what they're paying not only the players, but the people who work in the arena, the you know, analytics staff, the doctors, the airplane costs, like just figuring out all this stuff ends up being sort of prohibitively difficult, at least for the amount of information and time I have available to me. What we do know is what the Cavs paid last year. We know what their player expense last year was, and last year it was $156 million. So that gives us at least a sort of a line in the sand. It's not perfect, but the Cavs did go six games in the finals last year, so the ticketing and sort of TV revenue was probably similar. And you know, if they sign J.R. Smith, like I said, to a $10 million deal, that gets them to $164 million. Which is $8 million more than last year. And my guess is that's around the amount of money they're comfortable spending on it. Does that logic seem sound, or am I way off base here?
No, I think that makes a ton of sense. I mean, other than it just doesn't – the Cleveland Cavaliers, Dan Gilbert has never struck me as a guy who would set a budget that is like he's still trying to make money. It would seem to me that's simply the line that they are making money.
Right. So, well, who knows where that line is? Maybe he wants to make $10 million a year on the team. Maybe he doesn't want to lose more than $10 million on the team. He has a line in his mind, and you know, that's his like personal appetite for making or losing money on the team. And you know, we talked about this last time. Maybe he's making money. He might be. I mean, this, you know, we're in a time of unprecedented revenues. We're also have an unprecedented payroll here. So I just don't know where that line is for Dan Gilbert. What I do know is what he thought that line was last year. And I suspect it's pretty similar this year. But who knows? In any case, yeah, we have the following data points. They did not decide to retain Matthew Dellavedova. They let him go essentially for free. There was a trade, and they got a trade exception as part of it. But setting that aside, they effectively let Matthew Dellavedova go for free. The contract that Dellavedova signed was for $9 million a year, which was not sort of outrageously expensive for him. So, in other words, they didn't decide not to sign him because they didn't decide not to resign him because that deal was a bad deal. It was that they didn't want to spend the money. We know they haven't signed J.R. Smith, and we know that the assistant coaches seemingly have this, you know, riff about how much they should get paid. And all of these things sort of add up to, I think the Cavs are right on that edge of their comfort for the amount of money they want to spend on the team. That was more than 60 seconds, but that's what I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree. I don't really have any, nope, I have nothing to add.
Yeah, so let me just say the numbers one more time. So if the Cavs pay J.R. Smith $10 million. Sorry, one more thing. So there is a rumor. Let me see if I can find it here. That was sort of posted on Twitter by Steve Kyler, who is he's part of Basketball Insiders. He has 40 million followers. Oh, sorry, 40 million. He has 40. He's not Justin Bieber. He has 40,000 followers on Twitter. So, you know, to the extent that gives him some credibility, that is what it is. He posted that he was told that the Cavs have offered J.R. Smith something in the $10 to $12 million range, and that J.R. Smith is looking for something in the $15 million range. Take that for what it's worth. That's just, you know, what this guy posted on Twitter. That just sort of feels like about right. Like, it seems like the Cavs would probably try to keep him down around $10 million. At $10 million, their expenses are $8 million more than last year. At $12 million, their expenses are $17 million more than last year. And at $15 million, their expenses are, doing math in my head here on the fly, $33 million more than last year. So the Cavs have a lot of incentive to try to get that number as low as possible. And I'm somewhat concerned that this is going to start dragging into training camp.
Yeah, so, you know, gun to your head, how much do you think he's going to end up making, and when do you think he'll sign?
Good question. I mean, I feel bad for J.R. Smith here. The Cavs are basically asking him to give them a hometown discount. I mean, Timofey Mozgov got $16 million a year, and obviously, okay, it's obvious to me. It's apparently not obvious to the Lakers front office. Obviously, J.R. Smith is a better player than Timofey Mozgov, and you know, they're around the same age. Yeah, I feel bad for J.R. Smith because I think that if he had played his cards absolutely right here, that is to say, he was a choir boy to the media and there wasn't this stuff where people think that he can be a bit of a locker room cancer. I personally don't think he is, by the way. He got married this offseason. He's sort of aging out of his youthful indiscretions. If he was a more marketable guy and if he had played his free agency right perfectly, I think he could have gotten like 17 or 18 million a year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think a 2-year deal for 12 million a year is probably what he's going to sign. What do you think?
When do you think he'll sign it?
Oh boy. I don't know. I wish I think the Cavs are not super great at this part of negotiating. Last year Tristan Thompson didn't sign until like a week before the season started, so he missed all of training camp, and I thought that Tristan's growth was a little bit stymied by that. By the way, I'm super excited for what Tristan can bring after a full offseason signed without that distraction. A little concerned about Chloe, but setting that aside.
Yeah, a different distraction.
He's found something else to distract himself with. I think that J.R. Smith will sign maybe with 2 weeks before the regular season starts, but it just sort of depends. His agent is Rich Paul, which is LeBron James's, good buddy. I'm a little bit concerned about how long this can drag on. I really hope it doesn't drag into the regular season, but it could. But if I, yeah, gun to my head, I would say 2 weeks before the season opens.
I think I'm gonna say it even, 10 million, and I think it's before preseason ends.
Okay. You think, okay, do you think he'll sign a multi-year deal?
2 years.
I'll just say one thing about that. You could imagine him. So J.R. Smith is turning 31 tomorrow or the day after. He just got married. He had a kid. You could imagine he has some risk aversion here. You could also imagine that he's annoyed with the way that his free agency went. Like you could imagine he like next year the salary. Next year there's going to be a new collective bargaining agreement. There's going to be more money available again. Maybe he thinks, hey, I'll just sign a 1 year deal. And next year, I'll just go try and get rich. I don't know.
I mean, maybe. I guess like the question is what if don't you think that if anyone else wanted to give him money, they would have this summer?
Yeah.
Because other teams saw this coming. Everyone knew that we were going to be very far into the cap, and they could have offered 15 million, 20 million, 1 year, 2 year contract, and they didn't. And so I just. Like why didn't the New York Nets or the Brooklyn Nets rather offer him 25 million a year?
Yeah, I don't understand that. There are seven teams left with cap space: the 76ers, the Nuggets, the Nets, the Suns, the Jazz, the Timberwolves, and the Pacers. The Pacers, Timberwolves, and Jazz all have less than 12 million in cap space. The Suns have 13 million. The Nets have 17 million. The Nuggets have 18 million, and the Sixers have 21 million. But the Sixers, Nuggets, and Nets don't want J.R. Smith. Like they're trying to be young. So at least two of those teams are actively trying to lose games on purpose, so they don't want to bring in a veteran, especially a veteran who there are some character issues with. Again, I don't think he has character issues, but I think his reputation precedes him there.
Yeah,
It's
well, I mean,
tough.
but that's looking at the cap right now. But if we're talking about as free agency opened, there are teams that could have made themselves better who didn't choose to make
Yeah,
an
they chose
offer.
other people. Well, maybe at the
Wouldn't you
time, J.R.
rather have?
Smith. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, don't you think that the New York Knicks under a different regime would rather? I mean, I guess he already played there and got traded away, but he's better than Courtney Lee, right?
Yeah, I think there are a few things going on here. I think one, at the beginning of the offseason, Rich Paul had told J.R. Smith, or J.R. Smith had told Rich Paul, hey, I want to play for the Cavs. I want to stay here. Try to figure out what maximizes my leverage with the Cavs, but keeps me here. But like as things sort of went on, like maybe they sort of misplayed that a little bit, or maybe something else. Look, I don't know. I'm just speculating here. I don't, actually, I just don't know.
Yeah, I think we're kind of shooting blanks right now.
Yeah, I think we've accurately categorized the situation. But okay, I just wanted to say one more thing here. So let's say they sign him for 10 million. Let's say 11, since you thought it was 10 and I thought it was 12. Let's say they get him in here for 11 million a year. That will put them at 168 million. call it $169 million in player expenses. Had the Cavs also matched on Matthew Dellavedova to keep Matthew Dellavedova in, they jump from $168 million to $217 million. So,
wow.
Yeah, basically an extra $50 million in payroll. So that's why they didn't match with Matthew Dellavedova. It's not like they were saving $9 million. They were saving $50 million. So that's what happened there. It's really unfortunate. I'm going to miss Delly, and I think that leaves a bit of a gaping hole in our team in terms of backup point guard, but it is what it is. Okay, so we've been going for 45 minutes here. I did make a list of rapid-fire questions to ask you to wrap up the show with. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay, question one. I should have ordered these a little bit better. They're sort of random, but anyway, here we go. Do you think the Cavs already regret not signing Matthew Dellavedova? So before you answer, because I think I just sort of hinted as to why they don't, right? $50 million, yeah. $50 million. I don't care if he's, you know, whatever, who's somebody really good. I don't want to say Kevin Durant. I don't care if he's Steph Curry. Like, $50 million is a lot of money. But yeah, I mean, even if they did sign him to that 9-year deal, that would be a tradable contract, especially after all the money those other people got. So do you think they regret it?
If we're just simply to take the tax out of it, then absolutely. I think it's like we said, they're weak on guard depth, and Delly had a great season for him, and he's a guy that they signed him. He was undrafted, and they've been developing him for years. I mean, of course, I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, he was good for marketing too. People really liked
absolutely.
Him. His Olympic stats. So he played the exact same number of minutes. They played 0.3 minutes different per game than Kyrie Irving, but his Olympic numbers were 8.9 points, 2.1 rebounds, and 7 assists per game. Again,
incredible.
Kyrie was 11.4 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 4.9 assists a game.
Part of that is that Australia was running a much more like movement system with like
yes,
back cuts,
yes.
And USA is just running ISO almost every
Look,
play.
I'm not insane here. I spent a lot of last year arguing that Matthew Dellavedova was better than Kyrie Irving, because he was. But Kyrie Irving has gotten much better since. The playoffs sort of changed that narrative. But just two more things on Dellavedova's Olympics performance. He shot 52% overall and 47% from three. Like he had a good Olympics. But he's gone, and we have to stop talking about him. Okay, next question. Who do you think will have a better real plus minus, Kyle Lowry or Kyrie Irving this season?
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
I think defense plays
too.
A huge part of that.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry was the fourth best point guard by real plus minus. Irving was, I think he crawled into the top 40 by the end. Irving was the 28th best point guard by real plus minus. The big difference was their defensive plus minus. But yeah, I think Irving's going to get much better. I sort of hope for him to work his way into the top six or so, but I think Lowry will still beat him.
You could look at Lowry's playoff real plus minus compared to Kyrie's real
yeah.
plus minus, I think we would take Kyrie 100 times.
Yeah.
Out of 100.
Yeah, so the real plus minus on ESPN's site includes playoff performance, but you can't sort just by playoffs. And I agree with you. My intuition is that, just because I look at these numbers every day because I'm a nerd about it, my intuition is that Kyrie's was better in the playoffs. Who do you think, this is sort of a non-Cavs question, but it's sort of an interesting one. Who do you think will have a better real plus minus this coming season? Karl Anthony Towns, Rookie of the Year, Karl Anthony Towns, or Nikola Jokic? The center for the Denver Nuggets. So let me set up why I'm asking this. Nikola Jokic was the 9th best player in the NBA by real plus minus last year. There's been a ton of debate about whether that, like, in some ways invalidates real plus minus as a useful player metric. Karl Anthony Towns was 105th in real plus minus last year.
I asked Keith this question originally to try to test how much he really loves real plus minus. And you did answer Jokic. And
I mean, I sort of had to.
Yeah, I cornered you. But, you know, I listen, you look at Karl-Anthony Towns and his just physical tools. It just it seems unlikely that these were both just their rookie years. And so I'm not sure you can draw a lot out of that first season of play. But I'm going to have to say Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm going to stick. I know it's not as interesting. I'm sticking with the
I like it because narrative. I like that you're saying that because we're going to check in on this. And I'm cautiously optimistic that Jokic is going to like. I mean, look, if Jokic is top 10 in RPM again, everyone's going to agree that he's a great player because the numbers will just justify that. But yeah, right. For now, it looks like this weird idiosyncrasy with the number. So yeah, we'll see. I got to bring this back up. So Kevin Love was number 10 in real plus minus, right behind Nikola Jokic. Do you think that Kevin Love will improve his RPM this year?
I saw something on Reddit wondering how Cavalytics was going to be more pessimistic after the championship. So here's my chance. No, I don't think Kevin Love will have a better real plus minus. I also don't think he'll have a substantially worse, but I just don't think he'll have a better real plus
yeah,
minus.
Yeah, so his sort of classic numbers, points, rebounds, assists, all that stuff, even if you look at it on a per 36-minute basis, are all down since he joined the Cavs. His real plus minus last year was better than his best real plus minus year in Minnesota. And in Minnesota, he was, you know, putting up things like 26 points, 15 rebounds. Like he was having crazy years. So even though Love's surface level stats have been worse, his real plus minus has actually improved, which is somewhat encouraging for Cavs fans. I think his real plus minus is going to improve. Here's why. I think he was, you know, he came off that injury, the shoulder injury, where he wasn't able to practice much. I think that the Cavs have gotten better at figuring out ways to integrate him in the offense. And I think that year three of the sort of trying to integrate Kevin Love experiment is going to go better than years one and two. It has not, to my eye, gone very well yet, but
your headset's doing a thing.
I can't. Oh, is it? Oh, let me.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I think he's going to get better. Or at least RPM wise, he's going to get better. He's probably still going to sulk around and miss shots that annoy me, but I think his RPM's going to get better. Okay, do you think Kevin Love will finish his contract as a Cavalier?
I think probabilistically about this, I'm going to say no.
Interesting.
I would think that year after year, one, his contract becomes more tradable and LeBron will start aging. And I'm just not convinced they really love each other. I know someone's going to send me the vines of like Kevin Love jumping on LeBron's back or the other way around.
Sure.
Or whatever it was. But yeah, I just think it's, I would say, eventually they're going to want to shake things up to try to improve, maybe get younger, and or maybe to bring the banana boat guys together.
Right.
And Kevin Love's going to be that odd man out.
Yeah. It's a bit of a trick question because there are 4 years left on his deal, four seasons left. Well, three plus his option. So there's a long time there. So in general, deals that long, players, there's a lot of player movement in the NBA. So you get a little bit of a boost there. I also agree that I don't think the Cavs are thrilled with Kevin Love, but I think they're in a tough spot. You know, by RPM, he's one of the best players in the league. Certainly his reputation is not that, and getting equal value for him is tough. And so, I just don't know. I'm right on the edge. I think it's about 50-50, but just for the sake of disagreeing with you and having something interesting to talk about, I'll say I think he will finish with the Cavs.
We'll
many
check
games
up on this in 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, set your Siri, remind me in 4 years. How many games do you think the Warriors are going to win this year?
65. Ooh. So they're not going to have to try especially hard, but I think that them not trying especially hard will still lead them to win more than 60 games. I don't think that they're going to go for 74.
No, I don't either. I think going for 74 would be a bad idea.
And on the note of the Warriors, I know that basically a lot of the talk revolves around being like, okay, but these super teams are always really hard to integrate. Yeah, that's true. But when that's been true when all these other super teams have been guys who need the ball in their hands and haven't been for three elite shooters and then one above average shooter for his position all playing together. So, you know, who knows? The real plus minus predictions put them at some like 69 wins, I think, which is just unheard of.
It is unheard of because real plus minus is sort of notoriously conservative.
And there's like a plus or minus six on six wins on real plus minus predictions. So that means that on the high
don't
end,
say it.
You'd be predicting 74 wins.
Yeah, that's 74, 75 wins. I don't know.
Fun.
It isn't fun. It's so lame. I'm so bummed by this. But look, anything can happen. The Warriors are going to be good this year. It's good for the NBA because love them or hate them, the Warriors are going to draw fans.
Right.
It puts this like, you know, tiger out there for the Cavs to try to chase down, and you know, and look, I was so pessimistic last year. I thought there wasn't a chance. So I don't even know anymore, like how to even like sort of handicap this in my mind. Somebody could get hurt. Maybe Kyrie Irving is going to take the next step. Maybe Kevin Love is going to take the next step. You know, who knows? But I think 65 sounds about right. I really don't want to take the over because I don't want to have to root for the Warriors.
It's your hometown team.
I know.
Keith.
I live in San Francisco.
About?
I'm not going to take the over or under because I think it's the over, but I don't want to say it. So.
Okay.
I think they're like 67. I'll take the over. Ugh. You know what? Winning this bet is not important enough for me to win to actually root for the Warriors. So that's how I'll do this. I'm not going to like touchdown dance if they win 67 games. So I have a bunch more questions here, but we've been going for a while, so I'll just ask one more. Do you think the Cavs will win more or less, more or fewer or more games this season than last?
So they were 30-11 when they fired Blatt, and then played worse after that.
Yep.
And almost all during that time without Blatt, they didn't have Kyrie.
Yep.
So I think despite the fact that they just won the championship, I want to say more.
How many did they win last year? 57? Is that right?
I think that's right.
We should have figured this out. Yeah.
We're professionals.
Yeah, ESPN, NBA standings. The Cavs won 57 games. I'm a genius. I think
they'll win 60 games. I think that they'll break the 60-game mark. Like, if you think about a lot of these teams that have won 60 games, I feel like are teams that knew how good they were and weren't putting in 100% effort. But if you just think about the East in general, it seems as though they could really there's really only one other team that has any kind of ability.
Yeah, the Celtics, right?
The Celtics, correct? That would have been my answer to that question.
Yeah, so we should do we'll do like a future podcast sort of handicapping the rest of the East. But yeah, I largely agree there. I think 60 wins sounds about right. I'll take the over just for fun. And I think the Cavs are going to sort of set new records in optics of coasting. Like, I think they're going to have some really annoying games where it's like, come on guys, like just pretend to try at least so that like, I don't have to be embarrassed for watching and for caring so much. But I also think that Love and Irving are healthy. I think that the Cavs were galvanized. Thank you, David Griffin, for introducing that into all Cavs fans' vernaculars. I think the Cavs were galvanized by their playoff run and sort of have sets now that are sort of more reliable. And they were just so discombobulated coming into last season that, I think they've gotten over that.
Here, let me ask you a question before we wrap up. How many times a game on average do you think the Cavs are going to run that horn set? Where, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Well, why don't you describe it just because it's sort of hard to describe.
I'm going to describe it wrong. I was actually trying to talk about it the other day, and it's just been 2 months, so it's kind of fading from my memory. But if I remember correctly, LeBron would go and set a pick for Delly, who would then – just correct me when I say something wrong.
Nope, you're good so far.
Who would then start to – kind of collapse and would give, then Richard Jefferson would set an off-ball pick for Delly. And
I think that's right. But basically, it was a somewhat complicated double action where the Cavs set a screen and then a screen for the guy coming off the initial screen. And it worked so well against the Warriors that, like, yeah, it was like twice a game they were getting Richard Jefferson an open dunk. It's sort of embarrassing for the Warriors that they didn't figure it out by, you know, the end of the finals.
That was specifically worked really well on the Raptors as well.
Those are the kinds of synergies that I think teams that play together for long periods of time start to develop. And Jefferson was new, but all the rest of those guys had been around for a number of years, and Jefferson was just the guy who, you know, ends up winning at the end on that play. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the new synergies that I think the Cavs are going to have, and yeah, we'll sort of see what develops. All right, I'm going to start the outro here. So this has been episode 40 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. We endeavor to respond to everything we receive at both of those two places, so please don't be shy. And thanks for listening, and go Cavs.